everybody, and welcome to episode 101 of season 11 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we curry our way through the 2001 HBO award-winning miniseries Band of Brothers, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and join me once again to finish off his three-episode arc in this season is Alan Sanders of The Alan Sanders Show. Welcome back once again, Alan.
Thank you so very much. And your hospitality over the weekend and the fact that your wife put up with our banter all weekend is saying something, a testament to her.
Yes, that's true. That's true. And I knew you could get away with 25 hours without using your cell phone. It would work. So
it was a challenge, but I had so much fun hanging out with you. It was worth it.
You
were a nice distraction.
I'm glad I was able to help. All right, so episode 101 begins with the soldiers looking at a dead body in the street, and ends with Jones joining up with Luz. So we ended things yesterday with unfortunately Bill Keane getting hit by a sniper while he was lugging a sack of potatoes. You know, while they're in the middle of this town that keeps getting bombarded and sniped at.
Mm-hmm.
And basically the, you know, Webster and Jones are looking at this body, and then they start walking away. And then Jones says, "Did you know him well?" He goes, "No, not really." Which is also interesting, because we know that both Webster and Keane were Tacoma men, so they knew each other. You know, the question is how friendly were they?
Mm-hmm.
If they were, you know, if they were in different platoons, stuff like that, they might just know each other in passing. You know, as you know, we've mentioned numerous times, there were so many guys in Easy Company and so many guys that were in Tacoma. Not everyone knew one another as well. You know, you always have your little cliques of who you're going to be friends with and who not, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
So
it is interesting that Lieutenant Jones, this is, as far as we know, this is his first fresh combat casualty that he's seen. He seems to be taking it okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't have a visceral reaction. Everybody else feels just shell-shocked looking. He's more... I don't want to make it sound like he doesn't care, but because he doesn't have any connection, it's almost like, huh, where everybody else looks a little like, yep, lost another friend.
Yeah. It's true. But I don't think everyone else,
I guess it's true.
Looks shell-shocked, but they all look withered and grimy because of everything that they've been going through, you know, over the course of the last year. You know, that's the thing. Because when you look at Jones looks fresh, and all these other mm-hmm. guys what's the word for it?
If it's not shell shocked, while you're thinking your word, they've got a faraway look. They all almost have a 1,000-yard stare. The one kid over the shoulder of the medic, over Roe's shoulder, eventually just looks across the river at wherever the shot may have come from. Michael Fassbender is kind of just sitting there, like, and just kind of, they don't look present.
Okay.
At least not to me.
I was thinking that they look raw. That's what it comes down to. Yeah.
Oh, they're definitely grimy and dirty, and where you've got the officer looks still clean and pristine, but.
Right.
There's just a difference in the expressions. Jones just seems more like almost mildly curious about, like, hey, that guy just died. Huh?
That's right.
And everybody else is just a 1,000-yard stare. And they're moving almost in slow motion. Like when Roe grabs the name, the dog tag, it's not full speed. Yeah. It's very deliberate.
Yeah, I was going to mention also that I love the detail of that, where you see that Roe takes off the dog tag and hands it to Christensen. You know, because that's the procedure. And then the shot changes, and we see all of these guys taking hot showers. You know, they finally found a way to do it.
Finally, getting.
And, you know, you see that there's snow on the ground and there's a lot of mud because, that's what free range showers is going to do for you. It's going to be a lot of water on the dirt mixing in mud, but, you know, the fact that they were able to set this up for these guys works really well. You know, that they can finally feel a little refreshed, you know, from this whole thing. And then,
Let me tell you a quick story. I had the pleasure of interviewing a guy who served in Patton's Third Army, he was part of this march across Europe. And he was in with his grandson, and he wanted to be on the radio. We had him on my Saturday show. It's one of those times that I wish we had lived in the era we live today, where everything I could put digitally as a podcast, it has unfortunately been lost in the ether. But I'll never forget he saying this, because he said it like three or four times. Of all the things he said, all the things he did, he said, "Do you know what it's like to go 30 days without a shower?" He said, "I went 30 days without a shower." It was 30. He kept saying it 30. Like, it must have been just, you just smelled right. Like a foot that's festering. And that was one of his strongest memories. The other one is that he shared with me, which goes through with the randomness of what Band and Brothers does so well. He said one night we stopped in this little kind of quote village. There was a little house. And I remember the guy, the whoever had the house was drying ham in the back room, and one of the back rooms where they had just where the it was curing. And he said it was about 3 o'clock in the morning, and all I kept thinking about was, I bet that ham's good. I bet, he said, and I got up in the, you know, to go grab a hunk of ham. The minute I got in that back room, a shell landed in the front of the house.
Wow.
And killed everybody in the room where I was sleeping, but I had gotten up to get a piece of ham. Yeah. Yeah, it was wild. And his son had just come back from Desert Storm. So his son said, his grandson, he said, the only thing I can tell you is I saw combat, but not like my grandpa. But he said, you'll never forget how close the bullet was to your head when you realize it cracks going by because it's breaking the sound barrier. And he said, I heard a bullet go literally past my ear.
Wow.
And I heard the crack as it shot past my head. Yeah. But just something about just this whole thing about the showers reminded me of that interview I had with this old World War II vet before he died. And I love the fact that he was in Third Army. He was part of Patton's blood and guts. He goes, yeah, it was our blood, his guts.
And, you know,
so this is something for the audience. If you can't wrap your mind around, it's not just going 30 days without a shower where you're sitting around watching TV and, you know, eating pizza. That's one thing. These guys are living in the same clothes for days on end, in this case, however many days, not getting a change, sweating, and then getting wet, and then whatever. It's just, you're just filthy, and you're just disgusting, and everybody smells.
And so they're happy that they're finally getting this shower, and they even get soap. You know, we see you know, Popeye tosses the McClung soap. And, you know, they're very grateful for this whole thing. And, you know, they only give us a few seconds of it, but it works, you know, to show us how in need these guys were to get the shower, and how grateful and thankful they are that they have it. And then,
something that we all take for granted, but when it's gone, gosh, that shower, that first shower after a long, long time.
Especially since, these guys are taking showers and then putting back on the same clothes. It's not like they're getting fresh clothes.
More than,
you know, but at least you can feel, you know, refreshed from that whole thing. And then Lipton, the camera pans outside, and we see that Lipton calls over Malarkey, and he goes, okay, Jackson, you and Liebgott, Powers, Wynn, Webster. All right. And Malarkey then turns around and goes, second platoon on me. All right, I'm leading this patrol. CO wants Grant, Liebgott, Wynn, Jackson, Shifty from third platoon, and Webster. They want anybody from first? Nope. Is there anybody they don't want from second? Jesus Christ. That list sounds like everybody to me. The always second platoon. Swear to God, if we were down to three guys, they'd still want us for it. Because I can't believe they're going to make Malarkey lead it. Christ, he only lost his five best friends. And he goes, what the fuck he's got to live for? So, I mean, it's interesting, this conversation that these guys are having. And, you know, there is the idea, and they might mention it here at some point, but one of the reasons why they kept choosing Second Platoon to do things was because these are the guys they trusted. You know, Winters knew that if you need to get something done, the Second Platoon you send to go do it. And, you know, these guys in the moment might not completely believe it or care about it. But the bottom line is that that's what it is. You know, now when Lipton and Malarkey are talking, there's a sign. The camera does it like a 360 around them, and you can see a sign in the background. Did you happen to notice what that sign says?
The one kind of cut off something, are now enemy something, immunize or something, minimize.
Nope. It's a sign that says secure all personal items. If it goes in here, it's gone.
Okay, so I guess I'm not on the right moment, because I know they were standing next to one sign. Okay.
Oh no, I know what sign you're talking about. There's another sign that, right when Malarkey starts talking to the men.
Right.
I was talking about when he was talking with Lipton. When he was talking with Lipton, so there's one sign there, and this is a sign that we see quite often.
Yeah. I see it. Part. As the camera swings around, secure all personal items. If it goes in here, it's gone.
Right. So the sign you're talking about is one that says you're now under enemy observation. Minimize exposure. Yes, that we see throughout this entire part, because they all know it. And it's also great. You see like the river flowing under them because there's so much water that is being used / wasted for these showers that are needed. So that's fine.
Mm-hmm. One of the things they do so effectively in this episode is just Malarkey. He knows what he has to do. He knows what's expected of him. But it's like he's pulling from some reservoir that probably was empty a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. Right. Especially given the fact that, and we've seen this, I mean, he was very close with Garnier. He was very close with Compton. He was very close with Joe Toy.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, just to see what happens to your best friends like this is heartbreaking.
Mm-hmm.
But he has to keep going on. You know, that's the thing that he has to deal with. And then Cobb walks over to Webster,
mm-hmm.
and he says, "It's been a long time since you last showered, Professor."
Yeah.
And Webster doesn't like it. He doesn't like that. You see him gritting his teeth. And he just turns around to go get his stuff. Like he's not going to go take a shower at this point for this whole thing. And we hear someone say, "Is it hot water or cold water? Come on, hurry up, will ya?" All right. Then Webster goes, "I guess I don't really need a shower." Yeah. Jones agrees with him and goes, "Yeah, I don't either." Then Webster says to Jones, "Lieutenant, yeah, says, you don't want to get your ODs dirty?" "Of course. I was just thinking, Sergeant Malarkey is really in no condition to be on this patrol. Maybe if you offered, you can go in his place, being that you're an officer." "No, they want someone with experience." And he goes, Webster then responds and goes, "The guys, they picked up plenty of that."
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's nice to see that Webster understands that Malarkey needs a little bit of a break. And we also see it as Malarkey is getting changed in order to go into the shower.
Yeah.
You see the, what's it called? The 1,000-yard stare or something like that. On his eyes. Like he's happy that he's going to be able to take a shower, but you know, he's,
well, I don't even know if he's happy. It's like you get this, at least when I look at it, it's like, I can't believe I got to go on another mission. I can't believe I got to do this again. How many times do they have to keep coming to me? How many? You just get the sense of he just doesn't have anything left.
Right.
Even when he gets right. Under the water, he can't even really enjoy it. Even when he closes his eyes and tilts his head back,
right.
He almost has a pained expression. Like, is this like, why have this moment of probably what's going to be an awesome feeling, knowing in my mind this could be the last shower I ever take.
Right.
It doesn't create. I mean, everybody does such a good job between direction, the writing, the acting, the close-ups, just conveying so much in just moments with facial expressions, and these guys are really good.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about that. They knew who to pick here to be in this one. No question about that. And I mean, I like the way that Webster sort of manipulates Jones here in order to help out Malarkey. Again, it goes back to what we were talking about last week about the fact that Webster is doing all he can on the one hand to help himself, but also to help others if possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's not being completely selfish here. And he's also not being completely selfless. You know, but he's doing what he can to move things, to nudge things in certain directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of thing. To plant the idea, you know, in Jones's mind that, hey, you know, maybe you can, you know, I'm going to give you an idea of how you can try to maybe convince them to let you go and to give Malarkey a little bit of a break. You tell them that you want to go lead it, but, you know, the rest of the guys are experienced enough. They don't need Malarkey, you know, that type of thing. So it's interesting the way that he's doing this, because we're going to see it in a few days from now. We'll see that he does it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with again trying to call a little bit of a favor. I like the fact of the I like the way that they're presenting Webster here. You know, that he's beginning to realize that, you know, these guys went through a hell of a lot of stuff over the last few months that he wasn't there, and he needs to step up and, you know, do what he can to alleviate anything that these guys alleviate whatever he can to help everyone else cope and make it through this.
You know, and I think saying that, what you just said, I think this is the moment when Webster, at least there's a sign of moving in a different direction. Instead of it being about, why aren't you accepting me? I feel like an outsider. I feel like I was trying to help, and then I got, you know, it turned from, instead of about internalizing it to him, he saw how much he could help if he could maybe give Garnier a break. If he could just get Jones to step up. Sorry, Malarkey. Sorry, go. Give Malarkey a break. It's the first time that it's not necessarily manipulating for like his own personal gain or greed. I think he really is trying to, okay, I haven't been able to work my way back into the guys, but maybe I can still do something for at least one of the guys for now.
Exactly.
And I think it's a nice moment.
Yeah.
I remember the first time seeing this, I'm like, he's acting almost like a con man. Like he's trying to hoodwink people, but I think it's not in a negative place. He's trying to gently, I mean, it is a form of manipulation, but he's trying to do it in a way that's for the great, for yeah. the greater good.
Correct. And then we're back with narration, and Webster says, Lieutenant Jones wanted to experience combat before the war was over. Tom Malarkey had been on the front lines every time Easy Company had seen action since D-Day. If it was possible for them to switch places for the patrol, it would be a small moment of justice. As welcome as a hot shower and a fresh uniform. The decision, though, was not theirs to make. And we see, as he's you know, giving us this narration, we see that Jones is walking over to Malarkey to possibly you know, bring this up and mm-hmm. try to maybe convince Malarkey that this is what he should be doing. You know, that type of thing. It's also good that we don't need to see their conversation. We just see that the fact that they're talking. You know, and Malarkey's probably just saying to himself, you know, hey, whatever, if you can get that done, no problem.
Now, we don't have a problem time-wise, but we just see the cut-in of Malarkey getting in the shower.
And now he's already...
There's a couple of these conversations, and he's fully clothed and walking away.
He takes quick showers.
Couldn't be too long.
Takes a quick shower.
Yeah.
He's conscious of saving water.
Well, and to be honest, they probably are trying to let you get in there for like your quick 3-minute shower and then the next guy. Although the guy that they keep showing his butt to us has been in there forever. It's just kind of wild that it works, even though if you try to break it down, how long legitimately was the time from, do you really need a shower, professor? Or how long has it been since you had a shower, professor, to, hey, why don't you go talk to Malarkey? And he's already fully clothed, dry, and
okay,
walking away.
We know the answer to that. It's exactly 1 minute.
Okay, 1 minute of
That's
screen
right. One
time.
Minute of screen time from when Webster says, I guess I don't really need a shower. That was at 20 minutes and 53 seconds into this part. And when we hear the narration say the decision that was not theirs to make, that was 21:46. So it's not even a minute. So.
And yet we don't have any problem.
We could probably just call him Speedy Gonzalez. There you go. Arriba, arriba, arriba. You know. And then the shot changes and we're inside of a room. And Les goes, God damn it, Johnny. You're breaking my heart. I'm telling you. And then Martin goes, come on, George. Just give me 10, 15 bars. And you see that there's a lot of Baby Ruth chocolate bars. And mm-hmm. we can also see that there's Juicy Fruit bubblegum. You know, these guys are just all trying to get something for the. And Les goes, here you go, Juicy Fruit. Happy? He gives it to him. He says, we just got a report of movement. Lipton wants you to lay a few bazooka rounds into a house across the river. And
you did notice that there are big, thick Hershey bars,
yes,
too. Not the traditional like we grew up with, you know, flatter and wider. These are the thicker, like almost like they look like as thick
That's
as a
right.
granola bar.
Exactly, and I mean it's first of all they seem to use chocolate quite often here throughout this entire series. There's a lot of moments of chocolate.
Well, I know that's, I mean, that was part of the
rations.
Yeah, a lot of the GI rations.
Yeah.
You would get it.
Which makes sense. And, you know, the guys start filing into the room. Cobb shows up. Liebgott shows up. And Liebgott says, you think we can at least get a Hershey bar? And then Cobb says to him, come on, you're first platoon at heart, aren't you? And Les says, Jesus, Cobb, there's not enough. He goes, whoa, Hershey bars. Jesus Christ, wait your turn, Liebgott. Yeah. Who are they for? Not you, Lieb. Oh, come on, George. One bar. No, there's not enough to go around. You have Captain Spears here? Down by the river, sir. And what's great is the idea that all these guys are looking at the food and they're looking at the rations. And Joe's comes in and he doesn't even care about that. Again, it goes back to the same idea that he's not as far removed from these things as everyone else was.
You know, it's wild. As I was expecting at some point, and maybe they just thought people didn't know the history, but I was expecting to see M&Ms because M&Ms were specifically invented to give the troops access to chocolate that wouldn't melt. They literally, the whole melt in your mouth, not in your hands, was a result of the ad campaign. But the guy that started Mars, the Forrest Mars, you remember seeing, I think it was in the Spanish Civil War, that British troops had these things called Smarties, which were little chocolate pellets with hard sugar on the outside. And he's like, well, that's kind of an idea. Kept them from melting in the hot climate. And so he patented it. And then in 1941, The reason it's called M&M's is because of his partner, Murray, because it's Mars and Murray. They invented M&M's to basically sell to the government for soldiers for World War II.
That works.
If you didn't know that, now you know. But I've always, when I learned that little trivia, I always think it's so cool that it, the candy we all got as kids and we all thought about in our you know, Christmas and baskets and school was invented initially so soldiers could have access to chocolate right. That wouldn't melt.
Well, it makes sense. That's what you need.
Or if it got hot enough to melt on the inside, it wouldn't leak and get messy.
Right. Yeah. That's true. Okay, so we saw that they have the candy bars of Baby Ruth. So, Alan, what do you know about the Baby Ruth candy bar, chocolate bar?
It was not named after Babe Ruth, the baseball player. It was actually, was it Teddy Roosevelt's daughter?
Nope.
It's some president's daughter.
That is correct. It is the daughter of Grover Cleveland. His daughter.
Grover Cleveland. Grover Cleveland. Yeah. There.
Ruth. Yeah. Ruth Cleveland. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So the company named the bar after Ruth Cleveland, the daughter of President Grover Cleveland, who was known as Baby Ruth, because she tragically passed away in 1904. And therefore, you know, when they, you know, they originally branded the chocolate bar, it was called Candy Cake with K's, K-A-N-D-Y, K-A-K-E. And it's a chocolate bar that is a combination of peanuts and pudding, but it didn't work so well. Mm-hmm. And, in 1921, the founder, Otto Schnering, he reformulated the recipe and decided to, instead of keep the pudding inside, he changed it to nougat and added caramel, and he renamed it then Baby Ruth after, you know, after the daughter of President Cleveland, who, you know, died 17 years earlier, but it was still very well known, everything.
Mm-hmm.
As you said, it has no connection to Babe Ruth, but most people do believe that it's connected to Babe Ruth itself, and they say that it was a possible way to capitalize on people believe, you know, incorrectly, that it was a way to try to capitalize on the name of Babe Ruth without having to pay him any royalties.
Mm.
You know, but that didn't work. Now, in 1926, Babe Ruth himself actually attempted to launch his own chocolate bar, which was known as Ruth's Home Run Bar. And they actually, the candy company that made the Baby Ruth, Curtis Candy Company, they actually sued Babe Ruth for copyright infringement. And it took him 5 years until they won.
That's funny. Like, he's literally naming the candy bar after himself, but like, no, we already have a Baby Ruth.
That's right.
That's funny.
But yeah, no, it's just very it's very interesting that they had this type of that they had to have a lawsuit.
I love how the company just quietly said, yeah, you can believe it's named after Babe Ruth, even if that's not the story. It's selling a lot of candy bars.
That's right. All right, and now we will go to Juicy Fruit. You seem to always come on these shows where we have all these products that we get to talk about.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
It's great for me.
It's great for you because you're learning about it or because you actually know that you should be doing a little bit of research beforehand?
I said this, and I think I say this every single season since I first started working with you. I think I know what you're going to ask, and it's almost never what I thought you were going to have me ask or have the research ahead of time.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. I like to keep you on your toes. There you go.
You do. You definitely keep me on my toes. What do you want to know about Juicy Fruit?
Well, do you know when it was invented and by who?
It was the Wrigley. It's the Wrigley company.
That's right.
What is it? William Wrigley? William Wrigley?
William Wrigley. William Wrigley Jr. Very good.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know it was Jr. Yeah. I knew it was Wrigley Field in Chicago, obviously named after it. It was, I think it was pre 20th century. So I think it was late 19th century, wasn't it?
Very good. It was 1893.
Okay.
And this is the first brand of gum that that the Wrigley Company made, and it originated as a promotional freebie in order to help sell other items.
Okay. Hmm.
Basically, Wrigley was originally selling scouring soap, and in order to boost sales, he offered a free can of baking powder with every purchase. And at that point, when the baking powder became more popular than the soap, so he switched his main business to baking powder. And once he had baking powder, he decided to offer free chewing gum as the new incentive. And by 1893, customers were more interested in the gum than the baking powder, so Wrigley decided to shift the focus entirely to making gum. And therefore, he launched that year both the Juicy Fruit and Wrigley Spearmint.
Now, if I remember correctly, the flavor we think of today as Juicy Fruit was not what it was initially.
That is correct. What do you think it was originally?
Well, I'm sure it was another version of mint.
It was mint. That's right. Another version of it, because it's not mint now.
Right. Because you have spearmint, peppermint, and there's cool mint, but I think... Yeah, I remembered reading somewhere, or maybe we were discussing it when I did my food talk Saturdays, that they kind of combined, was it pineapple and, oh, what are the flavors that go into kind of the, like banana, or like it's tropical, but it's like, it's all like chemically engineered flavors.
That's right. It's chemically engineered flavors, and it's supposed to taste like banana, pineapple, lemon, orange, and, even jackfruit, which is a tropical fruit.
Never heard of that.
Yeah.
As a kid, I used to chew gum an awful lot, all kinds of gum. And I just realized, I was thinking about this the other day, I very rarely chew gum anymore. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I stopped chewing gum years ago because I'm always afraid it's gonna take out my fillings. You know. As a kid, I didn't care about that. I don't know.
Right. Well, even then, the gum that you have today, unless you're really doing some crappy gum, isn't that tacky anymore. It's very soft.
Right.
I just don't chew it. For some reason, I just like to pop a – actually, Altoids is my only thing that I go to. I'll pop an Altoid because it's just pure peppermint with a little bit of a, you know, sugary, I guess, you know,
right,
adhesive to hold the peppermint. But it's so – the curiously strong mint. That's I just always keep a pack of those with me.
That's right. And what's very interesting is about during World War II, Wrigley stopped producing gum for civilians, and they only made them for soldiers. And they sent them overseas, and their advertising throughout the war years was a picture of the package, and it just said, "Remember this wrapper."
That's nice.
Yeah.
You know what? There's a part of me that yearns for that sense of patriotism when here's the country, you know, doing what they have to and literally taking I'm sure they were being paid by the government, but to literally say that they wanted to produce enough to make sure that they didn't fall behind to give the troops what they needed, that they were willing to not make the products for the civilians at that point in time. We miss that.
Sure. All right, so basically Les is trying to deal with the fact that everyone's trying to take everything from him. And then Perconte shows up and he goes, "Hey, Big Mouth, give the kid a Hershey bar, huh?" Les goes, "You gotta be shitting me." "What's up, guys?" And because basically Perconte had gotten shot in the ass, in the when they were moving into Foy. So he's, again, it's I like the contrast here because, you know, we saw Webster comes back after being injured and nobody really cares about him. And Perconte comes back and he's, you know, a big man on campus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that type of thing. So, again, it's not as long of a time, obviously, but still.
Right. Isn't it the difference of one was gone? It's not maybe even necessarily the 4 months. It's just what happened to them in the Battle of the Bulge all the way through to where we are now.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And Percanti looks around and goes, I like what you did with the place, George. He goes, yeah, I did good. How you feeling? He goes, as long as you keep your hands off my ass, I'll be fine. Yeah, I've talked about this a lot. There are a lot of guys that also get shot in the ass in this series. And and then he gives him a candy bar and goes, here's a Hershey. Thanks. And Liebiger goes, he gets a fucking Hershey bar? He goes, well, he got shot in the ass. Did I tell you to stick your big ass out in the wind? No, but I expect a little sympathy from you, right? He goes, I should rub it in for you. I should rub it for you. Hey, can you believe this guy? Try to get him out of the war, he comes straight back. Mm. He goes, that's not what I heard. I heard the Krauts are finished. And the Liebiger goes, yeah, well, just to make sure, we gotta row across the river tonight. Grab a few and ask him in person. Are you kidding me? Which I was. Welcome back, Frank. And then Les goes, yeah. Oh, Jesus, that reminds me of Webb. I need to run these to OP2 for me. Grenade launchers for the night patrol, huh? Any day now, Webb. There you go. And he gives the stuff to Webb to take. He goes, you know what? Send these two. he hands him some extra goodies to take along with him. We don't necessarily know specifically what's in the box, but and we see that Jones is just staring at this whole situation as it moves along. Mm-hmm. Basically, possibly wondering to himself, you know, that how are these guys so close?
You know, I mean, that's not, I'm sure that's one of the many threads, but again, I go back to where we started late last week when he first shows up. He's still got his military decorum and bearing, but also logistics is supposed to be, I mean, the military runs on logistics. You got to have food, you got to have fuel, you got to have weapons, and he's watching these guys literally like bartering and trading and just who's tracking it, who's supposed to be getting it. It's like, it almost like he's confused about what he was taught in school versus what he's watching in practice.
Right. True.
Because these guys literally, I will tell you this, you learn to be friends with whoever's in the supply chain. Yes. Anybody that's involved with the supply chain, you better be friends with them.
100%. So I said before, we couldn't really tell what he throws at him, but if you look carefully, you can see that it says U.S. Army Field Rations Breakfast. That's all you can see on it. So he's giving him a little extra food to take with him.
Yeah, some pre-MREs, meals ready to eat.
Then you hear what happened to D Company's patrol last night? What? Replacing Lieutenant blew his foot off. Stepped on a shoe mine. Shoe mine. Fresh in from West Point. Had to come back empty-handed. And Les goes, no.
Notice how they cut to the lieutenant when they talk about West Point there?
That's right. Because again, this is something that is mentioned in the book. You know, they do talk about it. One of the it is something that happened at this particular place. And
well, what I took from it is this is that nice passive aggressive way of basically saying people from West Point are stupid, or just because you're from West Point doesn't mean you're smart. They can't tell this guy that. They can't be disrespectful to the lieutenant, but they can make a comment about the last lieutenant from West Point blew his own stupid foot off because, you know.
No.
They're basically putting him down.
No, what they're basically saying is you know, they bring in these officers who don't know anything, and.
Exactly. You know. Why did you say that I was wrong? That's exactly what I said. They're basically trying to mock the previous lieutenant for doing something stupid. They're saying it in front of this other guy that they also know is from West Point. Right. And he's internalizing it as just because I went to West Point doesn't mean I do know anything.
Correct. No, I wasn't disagreeing with you. It was something that just happened the night before also.
Again, from a writing perspective, I found it great because they're literally. They're laughing at the misfortune of the last lieutenant that came from West Point in front of the guy who just arrived from West Point. it's this is so intentionally done. And what I like about Colin Hanks, you don't know necessarily, because we'll find out where his character evolves. Is he incompetent, or is he just internalizing and saying, I better be careful that what I thought I knew, maybe I don't know nearly as much as I thought I did? Because he stays quiet. He doesn't interject.
Because he's gathering information as he's doing this.
Yeah. And I like it because we, especially you're watching it the first time, you have no idea what to expect of this guy.
Correct.
And all you're hearing about is how every replacement, every new lieutenant, they either were, you know, what did you say we had the other day? We were on our 15th.
Yeah.
Right. Or yeah, 15th. Yeah. And we just hear the story about this guy who blew his own foot off, or, you know, mangled it. We don't know where we're going yet with Jones. And I like the fact that he almost goes to, maybe he's going to say something, and instead he purses his lips and says, you know what? I'm just going to keep watching and keep it to myself for now, which I think is a smart move.
True. Right. So in the book on page 189, it tells the story. It actually happened during this last patrol. It said Jones and Mercier gathered the men who had made it over, divided them, and set out on their tasks. With Mercier was a just arrived replacement from Company F. Without Spears or Winters knowing it, the young officer, gung-ho and eager to prove himself, had attached himself to the patrol. As he followed Mercier up the north bank of the river, he stepped on a shoe mine and was killed. He had been on the front line barely 24 hours. So what's interesting is here, you know, they said that he just blew his foot off. In reality, he was killed. So, but it's a nice way for them to, you know, try to jibe Jones about the fact that, definitely could be a big problem here. and then Les goes, no shit. And then he looks over at Jones and goes, maybe he's a friend of yours, Lieutenant.
That was an obvious dig.
Yes, completely. Cobb calls out the vest and goes, hey, vest, what you got in there? More Hershey bars and Lucky Strikes for you rear echelon cord, huh? Hey, Cobb, with the mouth, please. The kid's just trying to do his job, all right? Jesus Christ. You know what? The hell with it. Count him up. I got to go blast his house. You happy now? And he starts walking out. You coming, Perko? Make yourself useful. Watch this for me. Liv, you coming with me? Jones then goes, is Captain Spears going to be where you're heading? And he goes, same vicinity. Yeah. He goes, all right, I'll join you. And he follows Luz to try and figure out, try and find Spears. Mm-hmm. So again, it's great the way that they're basically Jones is trying to figure out how he's gonna convince Spears and Winters to let him go, and if he gets in maybe with Luz, maybe that'll help him. You know, I think that's part of it. The whole idea that mm-hmm. you know, he needs to figure out who's gonna help him do what he wants to do. Now that Webster has planted this idea in his mind that he should take over for Mularkey. You know, that's amazing.
Yep.
And we're going to have to wait until tomorrow to find out what happens with that and if it works. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. Who knows? All right. Is there anything else you wanted to add about this this particular segment?
Not necessarily about the segment. I guess I've got some closing thoughts about this whole episode, even though I only covered, three segments of it.
Minutes.
But I liked...
It is 15 minutes.
It is 15. I really enjoyed the tonal shift from everything we've been through episode 6 and 7. Watching 7 introduce a voiceover, picked up in this episode to continue a voiceover from a different character, and then we'll get a final episode yeah. 10, I believe, mm-hmm. with Winters as yeah. doing VO. But those are the only 3 episodes that have them, and yet we don't. You don't realize it's not there early. It just, it almost like it fits by the time you get there. We're like, we need that sort of inner monologue to know kind of what's moving us along. But while we use that inner monologue to move us along, I feel like episode 8. Because you don't have any big battles in this. You have a couple of moments. Obviously, you have people who are killed. But it's sort of like a bridge to the final two episodes. It's like, we need to see that the men are different now, that they're battered, they're exhausted, they're psychologically strained, they've got emotional distance. You know, even the camaraderie of the main guys here, they get on each other's nerves that when they push it too far, they're brittle. And it's conveyed so well that the war, if you were watching this, let's say, like, you didn't know how close the end was, if you were an outside observer, like maybe like Jones is being, you'd have to say to yourself, if we don't win this soon, these guys are all going to break. Like, we better win this soon, because they're kind of all hanging on by whatever they've got in their already empty tanks, like I said earlier about malarkey. And I like how it took us in this arc to this episode, gives us a breather from after 6 and 7 to get ready for what we get in the next two episodes.
Very true. Again, it goes back to what we were talking about on Thursday, the fact that when this first came out, so it was split up into, two episodes every week. So 9 and 10 mm-hmm. are basically next week. And this is, you know, we have Bastogne, and then we have Bastogne and Foy, and then this. So think about it. Parts 7 mm-hmm. and 8 were aired back to back, you know, where you see everything that these guys went through when they were, you know, at the second half of Bastogne. And then here, you know, this is, I guess, sort of easing us away, but showing us that these characters have changed, as you mentioned.
Yeah, they absolutely have. And it's so well done, because it doesn't feel forced. It just, because we went through, because of the cam work, because of the storytelling, because of how close we were, we know what they went through. We felt what they went through. We saw their expressions. We watched, you know, characters who seemed so rock solid finally breaking, and they've reached, like, these guys that we're seeing here are probably not that far from where Buck was he broke. You know, it's just, you sense it, that was a pivotal shift in all of them dealing with Bastogne and into Foy.
For sure. Very cool. Great observation. All right. So today's segment is called Oh Brother, where my guests will give their top 5 movie brothers. So, Alan, why don't you start with your number 5 and work your way up.
All right. I can't remember if this was brought up, but it is one of my favorite brother combinations from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's Thor and Loki. I loved the two actors, the dynamic. It's great.
No, it has not been brought up at all.
So Thor and Loki. I know this one's been brought up, but Derry, Soda Pop, and Ponyboy Curtis from The Outsiders, number 4. Remember that book, reading it in middle school? Definitely. And then when they made the movie out of it, I couldn't wait to go see the movie.
I loved it also.
Yeah, just such good storytelling. And I remember, you know, I said that when we talked yesterday about, or excuse me, last week on Force 10 from Navarone, that I hadn't ever seen an ending where I was like, wait a minute, did they fail? They were supposed to die. I'll never forget. That was the first time I ever read a book that the very ending is him writing the essay that ends being the very book we just read. Like, it literally is the beginning of the book. He's writing his essay. I thought that was so cool. Number 3. This would be Bobby, Jeremiah, Angel, and Jack Mercer. Now, they're stepbrothers, but I love the movie Four Brothers with Mark Wahlberg. They're all stepbrothers. They grew up as brothers, and they all have to come back home to Detroit to find out who killed their mom. And I have never seen a better urban, like, inner street gang movie that was basically a Western. If you've never seen
Seen it. I've heard about it. And now I need to try and seek it out.
Yeah, it's great. It's literally four stepbrothers who have to come together to find out who killed their stepmom. Number 2, and I had to text you about this one ahead of time, because I was like, I just want to make sure you're okay with it, because they are fictional, but they also are real brothers that played them. But, you know, my wife and I, my kids, Harry Potter has been our whole lives. We still to this day, we watch movie marathons. We go to Harry Potter trivias any chance we get. My wife just got done getting the sixth. They're doing a radio theater version, audible books of all the books again. So they're more sound effects, multiple actors all acting it out the books. And she's gone through the first six books. Seventh book doesn't come out till next month. It's got to be the twins, Fred and George Weasley.
Well, you can have all of the Weasley brothers if you really wanted to.
You could, but honestly, it's Fred and George that are the through lines to all of them until the and even then, most of the last book.
Right.
But the absolute best movie that ever contained brothers, it is a movie that I watch at least once a year. Virgil, Wyatt, and Morgan Earp from Tombstone, which I know has been said multiple times.
Yes, but I knew you were going there also.
I love Tombstone. Talk about good writing again. That's one of those movies, the reason it will last. And I'll tell you this, everyone we've ever shown it to, because my wife is like, I don't like Westerns, but I like Tombstone. So many people, oh, I'm not a Western fan, but I like Tombstone. There's a reason. It's just, it transcends more than Western. It's just the writing, the acting, the story. It's one of the finest Westerns ever made.
Wow. Excellent. Great list. Thank you very much for that. And now we will play for one final time for you.
That's right, Dan.
Name that World War II movie. Yeah, you've done well. I don't know why you're complaining.
I have, except for the ones that I know I've never seen or even heard of.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, let's put it this way. Of this one, you've gotten 2 out of 3, so you're good so far.
So far.
Okay, well, we got the third one. Let's see what it's going to be. Round and round the wheel goes.
Yay!
Okay, this is actually a mini series that is the sequel to The Winds of War.
Herman Walk. Jesus, it's crap. What the hell is the sequel? It's
from 1988.
Oh my God. I know this. Oh. It's hold on, I gotta hear the commercial in my head. This week on ABC. 12 part.
Yeah, it is like 12 parts or like 14 parts or something like that.
It was freaking like it's War is in the title. It's because it was Winds of War, and then it's correct. Like
War is in the title.
War. If I go really slow, maybe it'll come to me.
Try to remember.
War and memory. War and remember.
Very close.
War and. God, maybe I haven't seen it. Maybe I just remember the ad.
It's you want me to tell you? It's War and Remembrance.
Remembrance.
Okay.
Close. Yeah. If it was a hand grenade, it would have been. I would have scored.
Or horseshoes. Yeah.
Or horseshoe.
That's right.
Oh goodness. Hey, dude. I was terrified because honestly, I've been listening to some of the trivia some of these days. I'm like, I never heard of that movie. I have no idea. I wasn't even alive. I haven't gone back to watch those older movies. And when you start digging in the 50s and the 60s, I'm like, ah. I think your oldest that you've referenced so far, Casablanca? I think that's the oldest so far you've had.
I don't know. I'd have to look back, but it's very possible that there's nothing from before that.
I can't remember if there's a movie older than that that's in your trivia so far. But I had seen Casablanca, so that was cool. I knew how to answer that.
Yeah. And David got two Casablanca questions one after the other. But whatever. The randomness of it all. What can I tell you?
Of course.
There really is randomness there. You said that in a way that you didn't believe me.
I said in a way that hear it how you hear it.
All right, fine. Okay, so Alan, would you like to once again tell people where they can find Alan Sanders?
Yeah, you can, if you're interested in more news talk and analysis of what's going on and maybe even more historical context, because I've been doing this for over 20 years in talk radio, you can find the Alan Sanders Show where you find your podcasts. It is a daily show that looks at the news of the day from a national and, depending on what's going on in the world, international perspective, but obviously from the United States, being that's where I live. And try to do that every day unless I'm on vacation. Don't have a staff where I can do best ofs or anything like that, but I do try to make sure that I do something every day when I'm here.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movearoundminute@movearound.net. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on Instagram. Based on what I just looked up right now, I believe you are correct that Casablanca is the oldest movie that has been mentioned here in both trivia and in Name That World War II Movie, because, again, it has to be a World War II movie. So you can't go that far before that. But, there were a few. There were a few. I mean, the closest I see here is Lifeboat from 1944. But, yeah.
Is that Alfred Hitchcock?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
All right. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest. And thank you very much, Alan, for joining me for these last 3 days.
It was such a pleasure. I loved revisiting this. This is one of the greatest limited series. If you're listening to this and you've not watched it, what are you doing? Go watch it.
Exactly. That's one time I will tell someone.
And if you haven't watched it in a while, go rewatch it.
Definitely. All right. So I will be back tomorrow with another guest. But until then, Curry.